Well, thank you, Brian, and thanks for all of you sticking around here for the last of these five sessions here on a Friday morning. So my name is Brian Krug, and I work for Corteva AgriScience, which probably nobody has heard of because we're a new name for Dow DuPont Pioneer with the merger that we've gone through over the last year or so. We've rebranded ourselves as Corteva. So we're doing our best to spread the word there. It's a little bit odd to be talking about soybeans at a controlled environment talk here at the ASHS. Just to give you a little bit of background, where I work at is in Johnston, Iowa, and we have 4.5 acres of greenhouse space that is broken up into some automatic greenhouses where the plants are moving automatically, and then we have static greenhouses, which is more of a traditional space. 2.25 acres of support space of head houses, and we have over 80 people working for us that range from contractors to research scientists. Just to give you a little bit of a background on our facility. And I'm going to spend the time here today talking about soybeans to just give you a little bit of background on our experience with soybeans in the controlled environment space. We built a new structure specifically for soybeans back in 2014, we had grown soybeans in the facility before, but we needed a little bit different facility to support that as we started to scale up our projects. Our first large-scale soybean production project in that new space was in 2015, and then we had received our first tissue culture plants in our facility was in 2016. And then over the last year, we started about a year ago, and I'm going to talk about some of the work that we've done in the past year, is this soybean process improvement initiative where we were looking at how we have traditionally grown our soybeans in the greenhouse and how we've tweaked that to be more efficient and just do a better job. So I'm going to cover a couple of projects there. This is a list of everything that we've done over the last year around soybean process improvement, and the two that I'm going to focus on today are the photoperiod optimization and training and trimming the soybeans, and I'll get into that a little bit of why we do that. So for the photoperiod part, soybeans is a short day crop, as we know, they need 12 hours or less of a photoperiod to flower. Why this is interesting to us, there's a picture here of the greenhouse that we grow our soybeans in. Happens to be corn in that picture, but the soybeans do grow in that house. In our traditional greenhouse, we have a crop of, mums or poinsettias that we can give one photoperiod to the entire crop to get it to flower. We actually are growing multiple maturity groups in one greenhouse, so they require different photoperiods because they're genetic groups ranging from what we grow in Brazil all the way up to Canada, and we have to grow multiple growth stages all at once. It's not like a poinsettia crop where we're trying to sell it all at the same time. It's a continuous 52-week process that we need to be putting new plants in and harvesting plants all at the same time. So we had to develop a new strategy for photoperiod control, and it's fairly unique. Each one of these tables that you see has 60 plants on it, and each table could potentially need a different photoperiod. So what we have done is we have a basement in our greenhouse. So all the plants go into the basement in the evening to receive their photoperiod, and we can control that photoperiod on a table-by-table basis. So that allows us to be very nimble and flexible with our photoperiod. We do that by taking them down this elevator at one end of the greenhouse or another. I know a few of you in here have been to our facility and seen this, and then this is what it looks like when they get down to the basement. Obviously, the lights are on here for the photo, but when the plants are down there, it is completely dark in there. So the objective of the study that I'm presenting today was we needed to determine the number of weeks that it takes to initiate flower for the soybeans. Now, we can obviously leave them down there as long as we need to, but these tables and the elevator move rather slowly, and to really increase our input and just our logistical space, the fewer weeks that we have to move them down to the basement is very advantageous from a workflow perspective. So we wanted to see like how few weeks we could put those plants into the basement and still have successful harvest. So we grew two different genotypes, two of our most common inbreds that we use. Those were planted last September of 2017 in Ellie plugs, and then we transplanted them to a gallon and a half pots there that you see in the top picture in the first 2 weeks of October. And then our treatments began the first week of November. So they went into the greenhouse at 16-hour photo periods, and then we started our 12-hour photo periods on the 9th of November. And the treatments were, as listed here, a progressive number of weeks as short days. So 1 week into short days and then back to 16 hours, or 2 weeks in short days and then back to 16 hours and so on and so forth, up to 7 weeks. 7 weeks is our standard that we typically have done in the past. Each treatment, we had three tables for three replications, and each table had 32 plants on it. And then those plants were harvested in January. They weren't all harvested on the same day. Just the nature of soybeans is it takes a few weeks for them to senesce and be ready to harvest. They don't all become ready on the same day. Looking at the yield data, because that's what really matters for us, is like how many seeds did we get per plant at the different photo periods. And what we found was as long as they had 1 week of short days or more, we had as good or actually better yield for the different treatments. So the two different colors are two different genotypes, but they generally trended in the same way. So we are getting at least 250 seeds per plant for each plant. And then we're also interested in cycle time. If we could do this and have we know that they're more facultatively short day plants. So if we don't give them short days, they will eventually flower. But it takes, probably a month or 6 weeks longer for them to flower and set seed. That's certainly not advantageous for us because we need to be pushing these crops through as fast as we can. So doing this and having shorter spans of time of short days, we actually kept our cycle time the same, around 100 days, give or take, or just a little bit less. So this is very advantageous for us where we basically concluded that at least 1 week of short days and kept our yield up and kept our cycle time the same. So it is a very successful project for us. The next process that I want to talk to you about is our trimming and training. And some background on that is if you've never been in a soybean field or been around a soybean plant, they vine a lot. And they will grow into each other, especially at the densities that we have them. But because of the automated greenhouse and the processes that we go through, we need to separate them at least on a weekly basis and put them on a conveyor belt to do the different processes that we have in our head house for the research that we're doing. And the conveyor belts and the robots really wreak havoc when the plants are growing together and vining together. So we have to make sure that they're separated all the time. In the past, what we've done is we tie them up. We either use twist ties or we've used tape binders to put them on this stake that we have in the center of the plant and tie them to that. And it's very labor intensive. Over the course of a plant's life, it's 5 minutes of labor for every plant, which doesn't seem like a big deal, 5 minutes. But when you're talking about thousands of plants that we're putting through every year, 5 minutes of labor is a big, big deal for us, and it cuts down on the capacity of the research that we can do in the greenhouse. So our objective was to somehow reduce the amount of labor that we needed for training those plants, which our idea was, can we automatically trim those plants? But we had to maintain the seed count. So I'll show you a picture a video of what we did. The plants come into the head house, and they go down this conveyor belt, and they actually, we set up some hedge trimmers, just some regular hedge trimmers. The plant spins around, and it trims off any lateral branches that go out too far from the center of the pot. My initial thought when our operations manager came to me and said, let's just use a hedge trimmer and trim them, I was like, you're going to damage the plant, and you're probably going to take a huge hit on seed. So we ran this last year. It started in the summer, transplanted them, same process as I mentioned before. And then for four consecutive weeks, we trimmed the same plants. And we had three different treatments, a control that we just trained the way that we normally did, a conservative, which gave a 15-centimeter radius of a trimming, and then a very aggressive of 9-centimeter radius from the center of the pot. We did 60 plants per treatment, and then we harvest these in November to get our data. So this is what the plants look like after they were trimmed a few times. The conservative here in the middle and the aggressive in the far left, or the far right. And one thing to be thinking about for us, we don't actually care what the plants look like. We care about the end product, getting the seed at the end of the day. So they're not the prettiest looking plants, but they're getting us the seed. When we looked at the data on the seed number, we did take a hit. We took upwards of a 10% hit on seed number per plant. However, our target for seeds per plant is 120 plant seeds. That's what our processes require, but we're more than doubling that. So even though our seed number was lower with these treatments, it's still acceptable to us. Cycle time actually reduced a little bit by a day or so. It was statistically significant for both of these parameters, but for us, in a practical sense, it wasn't a business significance. So to wrap this all up, like I said, a minimum of short days of 1 week didn't have any negative effects on either seed count or cycle time, and that really allowed us to increase our capacity of our greenhouse and our trimming. We're able to get that done much faster. We went from 5 minutes of actual person time of labor down to 40 seconds per plant over the lifetime. So we greatly increased our capacity there. The one caveat that I would say that we're still trying to work out with our photoperiod experiment is we provide 16 hours all the time, year-round, with supplemental light, high-pressure sodium lights. This worked really good in the wintertime. When we got into the spring and summer, even though we were giving the same 16-hour photoperiod, we were still inducing flowers, but the flowers aborted after a few weeks. So there's some interaction with not only just photoperiod, but daily light integral. That daily light integral, the larger daily light integral, started to counteract our short days when we only gave them 1 week of short days. So we've gone back to the drawing board, and just in the last couple of weeks, we've redeployed this experiment to do it in the summertime as well, to see what that minimum short day period is that we need to hit. That's all I have here for us today, so I'm happy to take any questions if I have any time left. Alex.
Right, just on the last point you were making on seeing some abortion on the longer DLIs, some of the literature was showing with soybeans specifically that although when you go back to long days, making short days of having initiated and going back to long days, you see some of those abortions, but also a certain level of it being high quality, meaning that when it's finished up with red or far red, you can either reduce the instance or increase the instance.
I don't. When we go back to long days, to long days, it's done either with a combination of natural light and then supplemental from high pressure sodium and metal halide, and we haven't really evaluated the red light portion of that to see if that is playing a role. I mean, certainly possible. I don't think so, because we started to see this problem probably in April and May. when our night temperatures are still pretty low.